Hi, today's August 1st, 2021, and I'm Padagasa Awara with my good friend John Westfall. We may be joined with an old mutual friend in a few minutes, but we'll have to wait and see. There's a lot happening this past week, and I didn't do as much confirmation as I normally do when we have a guest panelist. So we'll see if our buddy can join us shortly. All right, so this past week, as I said, was eventful. There was a lot of stuff going on, but the one that hit the news, for those who check on things in the Pacific, is there was a huge 8.2 earthquake on the Alaskan Peninsula, which is the part just before the Aleutian Islands, if you know what Alaska looks like. Not the panhandle where the capital Juneau is. It's on the west side, not the east side of Alaska. Any rate, so we had a little bit of excitement way over here in Hawaii from that 8.2 earthquake because we had a tsunami watch. Now, there are levels of tsunami notifications, and a watch is the lowest, saying, you know, hey, something has happened. Keep your ears and eyes peeled to news sources to see what happens. And then it goes up to, I think, alert and then warning. Might be another one, too. But in any case, so we were under a watch for about, I want to say about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, maybe just under 2 hours. So that was really interesting, you know, as you can imagine. I'm not too close to the ocean, so I didn't have to evacuate or anything. But, you know, I do have like a stream nearby that could have filled up, which would have been slightly scary, maybe, depends how much it filled up. And I was just thinking, you know, we were getting pretty good information through the National Weather Service and the Pacific Tsunami Warning Center and all that kind of stuff. And it's really great to have, you know, sufficient technology to sort of know what was happening at any given moment, you know, which has not been the case through most of human history. So, you know, thumbs up for technology. Probably didn't even hit your news sources, John. You were probably asleep when that all happened here.
I saw a headline come through, but by the time I had gotten up, it was pretty much over.
Over, so. Yeah. Actually, even in Hawaii, we had that. You know, I talked to some folks, and some folks have to get up really early, so they by the time it was over, you know, they had been asleep the whole time and woke up, said, oh, something happened last night. And there was no, you know, sirens or anything like that. So there was nothing to warn you if you were not awake. But in any case. All right. Next thing I want to talk about is, you know, I still haven't downloaded Windows 11 because, quite frankly, even though I have fairly new-ish, you know, less than two-year-old type PCs and laptops, none of them are Windows 11 compatible if you do a check. You know, if you like go to Windows Insider, you know, it does a quick check and says, nope, you can't try it. But I have been watching some videos of people who've been, one in particular, Microsoft Teams on Windows 11. And unfortunately, he demonstrated the consumer UI UX. It's the same app, but you know, he demonstrated, because I guess that's what's of most interest to most people. And the consumer UI UX looks to me, if not exactly the same as, you know, what we've got now, is so close as to not be any different. You know, maybe it looks slightly different, but there's no additional features that I could see. So that was pretty disappointing. I was hoping, you know, at least to be able to record audio and stuff like that, which would have been, or even video, which would be pretty cool. Have you checked to see if any of your Windows hardware can...
Well, I don't have any Windows hardware, so that's my problem. Well, I do, but it's my work Surface Pro, and I don't really use it for anything anymore because I've kind of switched back to my MacBook. So the Surface Pro probably could support it, but since it's a work laptop, I'll let them decide if they want to try to push a Windows 11 update to it.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, it's interesting. You and I are both enthusiasts, and I'm sure in your younger days you were doing all the beta tests and things like that. I haven't done it in a while, by the way. I haven't done any Windows Insider-like stuff since, I don't know, Vista maybe? It's been a while.
Well, and I've even stopped doing... I was doing the iOS betas, and now I really haven't been doing those. You know, it's more... It's more as my time has gotten taken up with other things, I don't have the time or the desire to work with beta software, and I don't have the hardware lying around like I used to. I used to have two or three older devices that would support whatever the newest thing was that was coming out.
Right.
Now I really don't. So it would be on my production device, which we know is a bad idea to always do, but that doesn't stop most of us geeks from doing it. So I really have to think about, do I want to potentially take one of my production devices out of commission for a couple of days when I find a weird bug that forces me to revert or rebuild or something like that?
Yeah. And not only that, but because Windows 11 is so fussy about hardware, even if we had, you know, and actually I do have additional Windows hardware, but even if you have it, it won't test on it. It'll just say, no, I'm sorry, your 2019 desktop or laptop is just not good enough for our test.
Just so old. Yeah, people complain about Apple doing that, but Microsoft has really thrown a monkey wrench into that with Windows 11.
Oh, yeah. And actually, you know, Apple, you know, gets short shafted, I guess, on that one, because their stuff runs, you know, on very, very old equipment. I was just looking at the compatibility for iOS, iPadOS 15, which is presumably coming out, you know, sometime in the next month or two. And it goes back all the way to the iPhone 6S, I think.
Yeah,
I think it's a 6S. So, you know, it's going to run on five-year-old technology. And I don't know how well it will run. But at least you can upgrade it and get the security features if you've got, you know, older hardware, which I think is very commendable on Apple's part. Whose main job is sell hardware, you know? The iOS updates are free.
Yeah. So
they don't make money.
Although there was a very interesting infographic this week on Reddit that showed how much money Apple makes and from where. And I'll try to find it while we're recording to put it in there. Okay. But the main takeaway is, yes, Apple makes way more of their hardware, way more of their money through hardware than ever through services. But their margins on services are what gets them all their money. Because the hardware, you know, it actually costs money to produce that. The services, not so much. So it's an interesting thing to think about where Apple is actually giving you things that you're not directly paying for other than you bought the device.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of services, you know, since you're the one who, I wouldn't say you convinced me, but you provided me with enough information to make me, you know, start an Apple One subscription. I have to say I've really been enjoying my Apple One subscription. I've been making a more use out of some of its features than I expected. In particular, Apple Arcade, which surprised me. As you know, I am not a good gamer. I am but Apple Arcade is all about casual gaming, so it's actually quite perfect for me. So I've been really enjoying that. And even though I have a Google, what is it called, YouTube Plus, what used to be Google Music, whatever they call it now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I have a Google Plus, I have to say I do like the iTunes, you know, world. Although it doesn't do the kind of recommendations that I think Google Music did or does. So, but I think it's got a bigger library. It's got stuff that's not on Google Music. So that's that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, Apple has a 36% profit margin on hardware and a 70% profit margin on services.
Wow.
So that is why you have interesting services with Apple, because that's where they have their biggest margin of selling. So they will go out and make iTunes have as much as possible and make the hardware or the software updates as far back as possible to get people to use Apple services.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of services and charging, you know, so I don't have it in our show notes, but I just wanted to note Google Photos, which, as you remember, switched from unlimited storage to, you know, limited storage starting July 1st, beginning of last month. And so I still upload when I need to from my iPhone to there, you know, for backup, as well as to Apple's own, you know, iCloud. But I also am uploading to Microsoft's OneDrive, whose photo features are still as dumb as rocks, unfortunately. But, you know, it does. And there are some files that just don't upload there. They're just, like, stuck perpetually. But what I did want to note was that it's actually working out pretty well. You know, I haven't been burning up a lot of space on my, I have 118 gigabytes, I think, total, because I do pay for the low end of Google One. And I can upload unlimited photos from my Pixel 4a. So I've been using my Pixel 4a for a lot. The vast majority of my photos are with the from the Pixel 4a, and I'm pretty happy with it. I've been, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but one of the happy rediscoveries I made is, you know, Apple's iPhone takes amazing night shots, but they don't look like night shots. You know, they kind of look like well-lit room shots or something. Whereas the night photo, and even the regular, just not night mode, you know, regular mode on the Pixel 4a, it's not as well lit as Apple's. And, you know, the lack of LiDAR means it's sometimes not as clear. But when you get the, you know, reasonable nighttime lighting, and, you know, you're not shadowing yourself, it looks like a night photo, which I really appreciate. Especially sky, when you take a look at, you know, take a photo of the sky with a moon behind clouds or something like that, which I've done. And I've actually posted one or two of those on Instagram because I've been pretty happy with the way they look. Okay, next thing I wanted to mention is I bought this a while back. I don't know if I mentioned it on Amazon Prime Day. You know, I've bought a couple USB-C storage devices, mostly small, you know, 16 gigabyte type thumb drives because that's all I could afford. But on Prime Day, they had a crucial, and for those of you who used to upgrade your RAM yourself in the old days, you remember Crucial. They're a major supplier of SIMs and DIMMs and so forth, regular memory. They also sell, you know, flash storage. And so I bought a 500 gigabyte Crucial X6 portable SSD. And the interesting about it is, well, one, it was $40, which I thought was a pretty good price. But the other thing interesting is it's a USB-C interface. So it's got a USB-C port on the SSD, and it's got a USB-C output on the, you know, on the other end of the cable. And so you can use it with an Android device and all kinds of stuff. I haven't tried it with an iPad Pro. But it's really pretty tiny. Fits in the palm of your hand. It's very light. I haven't really played with it, but I'm looking forward to trying it with a few things. Let's see, I just heard a boop. Oh, let's see. I think our buddy is available. Let me. Okay, so there might be a little bit of a audio disconnect when you listen to this. John and I were just trying to add an old friend to the conversation. He's having a little bit of technical difficulties because I didn't do as much planning as I usually do for these podcasts. But anyway, John and I were just talking about a Crucial X6 portable solid-state drive, and it's got a USB-C cable. Have not tried it. It says it'll work with my Android device and stuff, so I don't know if I have to reformat for different devices or what, but we'll find out. The next thing's kind of a rant, you know? So during the virtual CES earlier this year, Asus announced a really intriguing update to one of their lines, the ZenBook Duo. Now, the ZenBook Duo has been around for a while. So it's got two screens. It's got one big laptop screen, like, you know, every other laptop. And then it's got a pretty good size smaller screen just above the keyboard, you know, where like the function keys and stuff would normally be. And it's pretty sizable. You know, it's not a tiny little display. So I thought, wow, it'd be pretty cool to have one of those to, you know, to, when I'm doing research and stuff and I don't want to put up a second physical external display. So you have maybe notes in the bottom and some, you know, browser tab in the top and just kind of typing in. The problem is, it, you know, it's like $2,000, and I don't really need another Windows notebook. So, and I don't want to spend $2,000 just to play with it. So earlier this year, Asus announced one that is I think it was like $1,100, maybe even $1,000, but let's say $1,100, which I thought, I'd try it for $1,100, or at least think about it real hard, but I've never seen it. I've seen the other models. I think it's called the UX482. I've seen other models, you know, with faster CPUs or more memory, but they're in the $1,500 to $2,000 price range, and that's just above my, you know, threshold of pain for something I don't need. So...
Yeah, it's always frustrating when cool things are announced and we go back and find that they were vaporware, that they never actually made it out. And that's why I think another one of the reasons I don't do a lot of the cutting edge stuff anymore is because it was very frustrating. You know, if Microsoft announces it, you're reasonably assured it's going to show up.
True.
If Google announces it, you're reasonably sure it's going to show up. If Apple announces it, you're slightly more reasonably assured it's going to show up, although they've had some things that have not shown up ever.
Yeah.
You know, I stick to those three, and I'm not as disappointed as I used to be. I have sworn off of Kickstarter and Indiegogo largely, just because it's just too depressing what never shows up.
Let's see. Andy just sent me a Skype thing. Let's see if that works. Open Skype. Nah, we'll do it later. It's too complicated. All right. So we'll retry it, Andy, next time. All right. Yeah. So I agree. You know, it's been very, very frustrating. And even when it does come out, sometimes it's really hard to get because it's, you know, it's such a good thing that not only you want it, everybody else does. When Lenovo announced, oh gosh, what was it called? See, I can't even remember anymore. They announced like a $200 or $250 Chromebook last 2020 CES, and it was it had a detachable keyboard, which means that you could kind of use it as a tablet. So it wasn't a two-in-one; it was a detachable, and it was so popular and so affordable that, you know, everybody bought one, and it became impossible to buy. In fact, some people are selling it double the price. You know, kind of like when you bought your iPad.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, the heck with it. I've got a Chromebook that's perfectly fine. You know, I don't really need another one. I just wanted to play with it. And by the time it became reasonably available, it, you know, I was like, man, it's a year old. You know, the processor's a little sluggish. I'm going to just wait. So in the meantime, I'm pretty happy with two of the four Chromebooks I have. The other two are getting kind of flaky. But that's okay. They were not too expensive, and I got good use out of them, so I don't feel like I've wasted money. I still give them pretty high marks. Speaking of high marks, you have something that's sad but awesome, apparently.
Yeah, I have a very interesting story about a backpack I bought 5 years ago. So I bought this backpack off of ebags.com. At the time, it was called the TLS Professional Weekender. And it was an interesting design. It was supposed to be a travel backpack, but it could also be an everyday backpack. And part of the design was what eBags was calling the garage case or whatever. And so what that meant was that at the back of the backpack, kind of at the bottom, there was a hard-shelled pocket that you could put chargers and other things that you didn't want to get squished. They were basically protected back there. So it was, hey, throw your point and shoot camera, your electronics, all that in this hard shell compartment. So I bought the backpack. I used it a few times. I haven't really ever used it for anything other than travel. And so the last couple of weeks, I thought, you know, I should try to use it as an everyday backpack because it's not a bad backpack. And then it would be easier when I travel. I wouldn't have to repack something.
Right.
But this hard shell case at the back is kind of heavy because it's you know, designed to be crush resistant and all that.
Right.
And so earlier this week, I started looking at it and I realized that the shell was removable, which I already knew. But I thought, well, how much weight will that really remove? But it's not just a shell; it's actually a separate bag that has its own zippered front and everything else. So yeah, so it is. You can leave your stuff in it, pull it out of the backpack. Keep your chargers and everything in the closet and then throw them back in the backpack when you're ready to go traveling.
Yeah.
And it, of course, backpack about a pound or 2 pounds lighter without having this case in it. I thought it was just a lining, and so, you know, really, what was the point of taking it out?
Right.
So I was very happy about this, and I started telling some friends about this bag. I said, you know, this is a pretty cool feature. And then I went and looked it up, and they have since redesigned the bag. It's now called the Pro Slim Weekender. And apparently so many people did not know you could remove that back compartment and complained about it that they just took it out completely.
Oh.
So now nobody can have this epiphany like I had if they buy this backpack, because they redesigned it so that you put your chargers in the front, and it's a soft-shelled front. And you use the back for your toiletries, which I guess I can do with mine right now, but you basically don't get the extra hard shell bag, which I never even knew I had for 5 years. But if you're interested, it's still a decent backpack. And oddly enough, right now on eBags, the black is going for $170, but the indigo blue is on clearance for $109.
I wonder why.
I think they're just getting rid of that color. I actually have a friend who has the indigo blue, and it looks fine. So that is that's my strange story of having something that I've owned for 5 years, never knowing it had this capability, finding the capability, being really happy with it, but unfortunately no one else can ever have it because not enough people figured out this capability over the 5 years, and they just took it out completely.
Yeah, that's really a shame. And, you know, it brings up another topic, or it brings up a topic about how manufacturers, you know, and retail outlets need to better explain apparently simple but really, you know, complex kinds of products. Or maybe not complex, but unintuitive. I mean, if a person like you didn't discover it for 5 years, you know, the odds are nobody else has either. And you know, if a manufacturer really wants to sell something, they need to explain what it is they're selling. And the one that comes to mind is I bought a external display. You know, John, you know this sad story. I bought how big is it? I think it's a 15-inch external display, USB-C interface. And you know, so the two problems with it were they didn't clearly explain under what circumstances the USB-C can provide both audio video and power, right? It's very specific set of circumstances where that can work. And so, you know, that's kind of a disappointment. Not exactly a showstopper, but makes it much less useful since you have to now use more than one cable. But the other thing, which would seem really, you know, brain dead, is not, again, not exactly a showstopper, but makes it much less useful. So this thing comes with a pretty sturdy folding case that wraps around it. So it's not attached to the display. It's just a fairly sturdy case that wraps around it, protects the screen, so forth. You're supposed to be able to unwrap it and then reconfigure it so that it becomes a stand for this fairly heavy device, 15-inch device. The thing is, it is simply not intuitive how it works. And I contacted the manufacturer and I said, you know, all you have to do is put out either a simple video on YouTube showing how you fold it, you know, because it's like, it's got the complexity of origami, apparently, where once you know how to do it, you can probably do it, but until you see it, you don't know how. Or you can just have a really nice, you know, piece of paper with instructions on, you know, like 5 or 6 steps, however many steps it actually is. But they never did any of that. And so, you know, I use it now and then, but I ended up buying a really inexpensive 10-inch display, which I'm looking at now when I'm talking to you on Skype. And we're using Skype this week because we're trying to get our buddy Andy on, but we're unable to do it. And so it's sitting someplace. I mean, it's a perfectly good display. It's functional. Just they don't explain how to use a simple thing like, you know, how to fold the cover into a usable stand, which also means in addition to carrying an extra cable, I have to carry a stand for it now, right? Since I don't know how to use the cover properly. Anyway, that's my rant. Short podcast. There was a lot of stuff going on, unfortunately, this past week, including the whole tsunami thing, which thankfully turned out to be, for us at least, nothing. And some other stuff in life that was happening, so didn't really pay attention to much of the world, unfortunately. But thanks to John for joining me for this short podcast. And I will edit out the sort of audio stuff when we're trying to get our buddy Andy on, but unsuccessfully. And so for Andy, sorry we weren't able to get you on this week. We'll definitely try on a future podcast. And we'll talk to you later.